things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Very good.
Great. Okay, good. Okay, so we lost some people. That's fine. You know what? We didn't want them anyway. I'm just kidding. No, you know, we love them all. No, it's a wonderful thing. And I appreciate it. And feel free to move closer if you're in the back and you want to move closer. It looks like we have some empty seats. But I just really appreciate you came and spent, I literally was just kidding. That probably wasn't even a funny joke. I appreciate that you came and spent whatever time here. And I talked to plenty of people who said they couldn't be here all day. And I said, come for whatever portion that you can. And, you know, we just want to find out how we can make this a more loving place and have more people feel that they've been invited to the party, because there is no circle. It's not like who's in and who's out. Everybody's been invited to the party. And we just want to figure out how we make sure everybody's clear about that and that everybody knows their value. That's all. And we just want to figure out how we can help people be more honest. Because somebody just came up to me, Victor, what's the cool thing you said about honesty with willingness? What is that?
Willingness is always preceded by honesty.
He said willingness is always preceded by honesty. So he had a wonderful, wise sponsor, I guess, who said that to him. Or maybe he's the wise one who said it. But willingness is always preceded by honesty. So it's just, you're wise. It's just figuring out how we can help people feel that they can be honest. Okay, so I just want to take care of a couple of business things before we get into the big book. So this fellowship, workshop is a gift to you from our fellowship, right, of Overeaters Anonymous. So, right, we can all give ourselves a round of applause, right, just for being grateful. So, you know, we have a budget, and, you know, the wonderful thing is we just wanted to make this available. So it's a gift. Receive the gift and just, you know, use that as a testimony. So there's no collection, no donations. If you want to, you know, be more generous at the next meeting you go to, you can absolutely do that. But this is a gift to you from the fellowship. So thanks to Overeaters Anonymous. And the Los Angeles Intergroup. Quite a thank you, Elizabeth, who takes care of us. Right, of course. That's right. The Los Angeles Intergroup. Well done, of course. So it's a gift from our intergroup. So enjoy. And then the other thing is at the end, you know, when I got here, there were Nathan and Victor were here, and they helped us set up. They helped me set up, and we were done within 20 minutes. And then Monica came and, you know, pitched in a bit as well. If many hands make light work, so if as many of you as possible, we will end at 4:00. We could literally be out of here in 10 minutes if everybody would just pitch in. Most of the things, it's just getting some of those tables moved back where they belong. We can help you do that, and I would just invite all of you, right? If you were all my sponsees, I would direct you, but you're not. But I do have one sponsee here, so I won't even direct her. But anyway, please, if you can, please stay so that we can just, you know, get on out of here. All right? Very good. Okay, so now we're looking at the big book. And I would just tell you also, I have one God box left. I don't know if people use God box as a tool. And you can decorate it and do pretty things. You know, they do it sometimes at retreats and things. I have one box left. It's kind of a beautiful box. And a God box is just you put something in the God box, and then it's not yours that you have to worry about it or deal with it anymore. And what I do every year, I have two God boxes, and what I do is I'll open it on my birthday, and I read the things that were in there, and it's amazing. It's a miracle, right? They're either not an issue anymore, or I don't want it anymore. So it's really quite powerful, God boxes. So I have one box if anybody wants that box. Okay, so now we're looking at the steps as they're outlined in the big book. Okay, so I talked a little bit about, right, you get into the preface. Do pay attention. I don't do any of this with sponsees because, quite frankly, if somebody's really desperate, we don't need, if that's not the time we necessarily need to spend on prefaces and forwards to the various editions and stuff. But those are interesting historical things. And if you're in a real hardcore big book workshop, they're going to start right at the beginning. As a matter of fact, they're going to start on the page of Alcoholics Anonymous, and then they're going to get to this page, and they're going to talk about why the triangle and the circle aren't there anymore because we lost the copyright, blah, 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 blah. All important stuff, but that's not where I start with sponsees. So what we do is we start with the step one portion of the big book is from the doctor's opinion through the third chapter. So it's, in essence, four chapters of reading. So again, the first thing I'll have a sponsee do is we read the Working with Others chapter, which is the thing we're going to cycle back to, chapter 7, right at the end when you get to the 12th step. But they'll do that first. They get clear about the fact that you need to do the work, right? If you want something to change, You're going to have to do something different. So then, and then we start with the doctor's opinion, right? That's the first chapter. And in the beginning, I give there's, because it breaks down in terms of the step work, but again, the step one portion of the big book is doctor's opinion through chapter three. They'll read a chapter a day, and they'll do 15 minutes of writing in addition to all those tools that we talked about, right? But, and again, that's where you can figure out very, very early on if somebody's done. And if they're willing to do the work. And I want to figure that out very, very quickly, both for them and for me. So it's painful to be in limbo. So clarity is a good thing. So we just want to figure that out. Now, I would invite you, if you say, well, I don't have time to read a chapter, or I don't have time to do that stuff, let's take a look at that. Because if your life was at stake, if somebody said, you know, you're going to go into a seizure in an hour if you don't get a chapter written and get some calls made and get some writing done, and you're going to die, or your kid's going to die, your kid's gonna, or your dog, right? Say that to the woman with 11 dogs, right? You're going to lose one of your dogs, right? If you don't get this done in an hour, you'd get it done, right? So let's just start really being honest and saying, I don't know how to make myself a priority. I don't know how to value myself enough to say, I'm going to get this done. I'm going to find the time to make sure I can get a chapter read. If your life depends on it, you will do it. And you might not know this yet, but your life depends on it. You know, there's a great movie, Searching for Bobby Fischer, and at the end there's this little kid, he's playing a championship chess match, right? And he finally realizes, despite the fact he's down on the board, right, he's lost his queen and everything, he's going to beat this kid that he's playing. And he's figured it out, right? Great chess masters, they can figure out, you know, a chess game 20 moves ahead of time. And he's figured out 20 moves ahead of time, based on the pieces on the board, and knowing what a master is going to do, he realizes he's going to win this game. And he offers the kid, you know, the antagonist, right? So the protagonist offers, the good guy offers the bad guy a draw, saying, let's share the championship. And the bad guy, who's still got his queen and all these pieces on the board, says, no, what are you kidding? I'm not going to take a draw. I'm going to beat you. And the kid says, no, take the draw. Right? And the bad guy says, no, I'm not going to take the draw. And the good guy, the protagonist, says, take the draw. You've lost. You just don't know it yet. Right? And the kid, you know, the antagonist won't take the, right? And then he really gets burned when he loses. But that's what's going on with chronic slippers. Right? They've lost. You just don't know it yet, right? So if somebody wants to continue to not do the work and lie or whatever it is, you've lost. You just don't know it yet. And you get to be loving about it, and you get to be humble and sweet and kind and all that stuff. And then we just figure out if somebody gets it. So again, they start with the doctor's opinion, and the doctor's opinion is really, really powerful chapter, because it's going to answer, you know, the two questions I have: why can't I eat the way I used to, and why can't I stop now that I want to? And it's that allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. That's the big thing, right? And Silkworth was a wonderful guy. He was a Princeton trained neurologist, and you know, he was just brilliant, very loving and giving. He was like Sister Ignatia, and, you know, right in the beginning, there were people who just gave to alcoholics. They just loved alcoholics. You know, Silkworth treated 50,000 alcoholics before Bill stayed sober. And so it's just amazing to me that there are people who loved us that much, right, the unlovely creatures that we are, right, in our cups, as the book describes us, that, you know, there were people who just loved us and wanted to really be of service. And so it's just lovely in that regard as well. So we certainly pay attention to what, you know, the very humble Silkworth says. And then somebody writes on it. And people always say, well, what do I write about? Do you write about, you know, a paragraph? Or there's no wrong way to do this. Just do something, right? When in doubt, do something. So, you know, that's where it starts. So that's step one. And then I'll keep saying to somebody when they call on the phone, so, you know, you're on step one, so be in conversation about that. Every time you go to a meeting, share. Yeah, hi, my name is Sheila, and I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm on step one. And then launch into whatever it is you want to share. But it's a 12-step program, right? So keep people very cognizant of what step you're on, is my suggestion. And if you want to share about the step, even better, right? So that we learn and grow together here, rather than hear about your boyfriend, or your car or whatever it is, right? And, you know, which is fine too. You know, do whatever it is you need to do here, but throw it out there initially is my direction to sponsees. When you share at a meeting, and share at every meeting you can share at, right? Just put it out there and be of service, all that stuff. But again, that gets covered through the tools that we talked about. But just, you know, identify what step you're on, right? And it also just keeps you conscious, like, oh yeah, I'm on step one, right? Powerless over food and my life is unmanageable. And it took me a long time to realize how both powerlessness over food and unmanageability. And we'll talk about that when we get to Bill's story about why it was. So those are the lies. Okay, so that chapter. And then the next one is the next day they do Bill's story. And Bill's story is really cool. And if you really believe, if you finish and you really believe Bill's story and you really believe the doctor's opinion, if I really believe those, what they say is true, I can only eat on a lie today. I can only eat on a lie today. And there are three lies, right? It's not going to bother me this time. So the sugar isn't going to bother me this time. Second lie, it's going to bother me, but I'll be able to control it, right? So it's Saturday night, and I can do this till Sunday night at 11:58 before I brush and floss. That was my pattern for years, right? Remember you used to call time? At the tone, the time will be, and I would be like calling, right? It's 11:58 and 30 seconds. I'd be like, oh man, sweet, I just finished brushing my teeth. Right now I'm clean, right? And that's another thing. We'll talk about clean and dirty food. Nonsense, right? Unless you drop your food in a sandbox, there is no such thing as dirty food, right? It's just food. It's just food. Is it healthy food? Is it the sound and loving and spiritual choice? Maybe. But I always invite my sponsees, get away from that language. It's not about dirty food or good food or bad food. Is it sustaining? Is it life and is it life-giving? Right? Third lie, thank you. Third lie is my life has no value anyway. I'm a loser. So who cares? Who cares if I eat? Right? It's not going to bother me this time. It'll bother me, but I can control it. Or I have no value. I'm a loser. So who cares what I eat? Doesn't matter. Right? God doesn't make junk. Doesn't work that way. And, you know, I love Bill's story. I remember being on a trip. I was on a work trip, and I could not stop eating sugar. And I had called a guy in program, and it was so humiliating. I had gone out. It was a work trip, but I'd skied during the day with this really good-looking ski instructor. And at night, I was binging, and so I'd ordered from room service. I ordered Snickers bars. Insane, right? I ordered Snickers bars from room service. I answer the door. Who's doing double duty at the ski thing but the gorgeous ski instructor? And he's got a silver tray, right, with the bubble over it. Brings it in, lifts the bubble, and there's six Snickers bars. I wanted to die. I wanted to die. Not as much as I wanted to eat. But I wanted to die. And I remember calling, you know, he left the room. I was so humiliated, so humiliated. He left the room, right? I've got, you know, got a candy, you know, candy bar in one hand and, right, the phone in the other, right? And I called this guy and he said, read Bill's story. And I never forgot how much it comforted me because I knew I wasn't crazy. I knew I wasn't crazy. That's what I love about Bill's story, right? You keep turning the pages and you think, oh, surely this nitwit is going to stop now. I mean, now he's stealing from his wife and the father-in-law died. Come on, Bill. Doesn't stop. And it just gives me great, great comfort. And it also really sobers me up and it lets me know that, you know, it doesn't matter what it is. It's not going to stop me, right? On page 5, Bill talks about his health problems. On page 5, those financial troubles. Strong resolution on page 5. Sense of impending doom on page 6. Potential suicide on page 6. Escape from life. Elite treatment centers, right? Going to that town's hospital. He went there 3 times. That was the most elite treatment center in the country. You know, self-knowledge, fear. Great things happening. He had great things happening. That didn't do it. Hopelessness. Now, hopelessness ended up working for Bill. But it doesn't work for everybody, right? Look at Skid Row, right? So there's a lot of people hopeless out there. It doesn't work. So it just lets me know. There's nothing. That's why, again, I don't get frustrated with chronic slippers. You think, you know, people want to tear out their hair like, you'd think they'd stop. It's like, not me. I wouldn't think they'd stop. I didn't stop for a long time. I was like a locomotive, right? Then we go to there is a solution. And so you have this happy, joyous chapter, right? There is a solution. And it's, you know, so it's a wonderful, wonderful step one chapter. And we just, you know, we're not going to have time, I don't know, to get through everything. But, You know, so pay attention. You know, there's just wonderful, wonderful things in here. And, you know, you've got the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and all this incredible stuff. And but it's just such an uplifting chapter. So it's saying, you know, so you've got the, you know, remember the ABC thing, you know, the wonderful victory in the agony of defeat. Remember the guy crashes on the ski thing? So here's the, you know, you've got the horrible thing about alcoholism and so forth and stuff, and now we've got the there is a solution, the happy, happy chapter, right? The wonderful, wonderful chapter. Let's see if there's, is there anything in particular here? No, you know, well, other than here it talks about on page 27, we get referenced by Jung, the vital spiritual experiences. Jung says, Jung was telling him you need to have a vital spiritual experience, right? Or what Silkworth called psychic changes, right? So they're both the same thing. That's what we're going for. That's what's possible when you work the steps. And again, you're going through for that deep, deep stuff where you're going to really, really go down deep, and we're really going to just pull this stuff out. Because that's what's got to happen for you to stay permanently abstinent / sober, whatever it is, right? You got to have that again, whether if you're a Jungian, it's a vital spiritual experience. If you subscribe to Silkworth, he calls it the psychic change, right? Same thing. And it's described as, and it's I'm on page 27, ideas, emotions, and attitudes which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men are suddenly cast to one side and a completely new set of conceptions and motivations begins to dominate them. That's really important to pay attention to that. And that's really important to point that out to sponsees. Because they're going to have questions when we get to a fourth step and then when we get to an eighth and a ninth step. Why do I have to do this? Well, first of all, you don't have to do anything, right? There's just a lot of reminding about that. Because the longer somebody's been slipping, the more angry and resentful and, you know, I am not here to argue with anybody. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to do anything. If we're working together, I need you to be in my boat and be a good passenger, right? But if you don't, I will help you find another boat. But if you want to be here and do this, you're going to have to do some stuff, and you're not going to believe what you're going to have to do. But it's that this stuff is threaded throughout the book. It says if you really want it here, there's some other wonderful thing I was trying to look up, you know, myriad quotes so I could be a real hot shot when I got here and say, like, oh, on page whatever of the book, you know, read the book, right? Read yourself. And I had an AA sponsor in the beginning who said, read 2 pages a day in the big book. Because it's amazing to me the number of people in this fellowship in particular, but even in AA, people haven't read the whole book. You know, you'll be at meetings and somebody shares something profound, people be like, isn't that amazing what Mary shared? I'm like, it's in the book! It's not that amazing. Mary's not that amazing. She just read the book. Right? Why don't you try it? Right? So read the book, because you'll get through it in about 9 or 10 months. It's what? It's 575 pages, 576 pages if you count the last page. So, you know, read the book. But there's really powerful stuff. But it's really, and it says throughout, you are going to have to do some really deep stuff. And it's going to be stuff that just seems absolutely unbelievable. And then you better have that information when you're, you know, you're sponsoring somebody who's an incest survivor and we get to the eighth step and we talk about what we're going to do for, you know, the ninth step. You better have that information. Right? And at the bottom of 29, at the end of the chapter, this is where we first start getting directions about what it is we're going to have to do. We believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that they will be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too, I must have this thing. Fully disclosing ourselves and our problems. That's my job as a sponsor. Complete transparency, right? It's not, I always tell sponsees, you know, we're holding hands and we're walking a path together, right? That's, you know, we're in this together. And then we get to chapter 3, more about alcoholism. It's the last step one chapter, and you're back plummeting again, right? So it's like you have doctor's opinion and then Bill's story, which is down, and then there's a solution, and then you plummet again with more about alcoholism. And it basically just says, just in case you've got any good ideas, none of them are going to work unless you stop, right? Most of us, what doesn't the parent chair say? Yeah, most of us have been unwilling to admit we're real alcoholics, right? It's nobody, you know, we just don't want to get this. And, you know, we have the idea if we stay abstinent long enough, now I can do it again. This is where you've got the whiskey and the milk story. Right? For me, it was all about how can I make honey work? Or how can I make, my big one was artificial sweeteners. You know, that was a big one for me for a long time. You know, I am embarrassed to tell you. I mean, It's just embarrassing. I don't even know if I can say it out loud.
Do it.
I'll do it then. That's O-Ray back there. Like, do it! Give us the humiliating story. I have literally shit my pants because I ate so much artificial sweetener in chocolate. There is a candy, I don't even believe in the devil, but I'm telling you, there is a candy company in Western Canada called Purdy's. And I swear somebody has made a deal with the devil, because they have a sugarless chocolate that is better than, I think, just about any, it's better than Edelweiss in Beverly Hills. I'm not kidding you. It's insane. And I used to work in Canada. Trouble, right? And I literally almost, it was just by the grace of God that it didn't happen at the airport. But I'm not kidding you. I'm not kidding you. Unless you've run through an airport with your hand between your legs, you don't know humiliation. And do you know how many times I ate sugarless chocolate after that? See, that's the insanity. And I can only be loving and compassionate with myself about that, right? Lots of love and compassion. But that's the pathology. That's why I get a brother who's losing his leg piece by piece, and he can't stop. I get it, right? And it's really important for me to get that. It's really important for me to get that. But that was my big thing with substitutions, is I finally got it. The jury is in. Not even just the, you know, walk like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. It's not even that. It doesn't work. It's not work. I do remember this. When I was in Canada, and I went to an OA meeting up there, and there was a woman. I'd never met this woman. I was calling her to find out where the OA meeting was. And I was chewing. This was when I was in my gum phase, right? I would chew lots of sugarless gum. I mean, it's just by the grace of God, I never ended up with lockjaw, because I would chew so much gum. I mean, I would just blow through gum. I would chew it for about 2 minutes and take it out and, you know, start, you know, putting them on my bedpost. And I could tell by the color how much sweetness they had left. It was insane, because then when you run out of gum, you have to start chewing the stuff off your bedpost, right? It's horrible. It's just horrible. And I called this woman, and I'm trying to find out where the OA meeting is, right? And she, she's directing me where the meeting is, and somehow we get on the subject of gum chewing, diet soda and gum chewing. And she said, oh, so you're in OA, and you don't do the sugar thing, but you do the gum, you do that stuff? And I said, oh, yeah, no, I'm chewing my cud. Yeah, I do it. Don't you know, buddy? Yeah, you know. So all of a sudden, I'm from New Jersey, right, chewing gum on the left side of my mouth. I said, well, yeah, no, I chew gum, right. And she said, well, isn't that a problem for you, because you got a problem with the sugar? Isn't that a problem, chewing the gum? And I said, no, of course it's not a problem. I said, you know, she said, well, why not? And I said, well, because, first of all, I said, you know, it's a completely different thing. Sugar, for one thing, sugar makes me crazy. And then there was a long pause, and she said, really? Because you sound pretty crazy to me. Did you hear that? She said, really? You sound pretty crazy. And I'd never talked to this woman before on the phone. And of course, I was too humiliated to show up at the meeting, right? No humility at all. But she had absolutely nailed it. This is a woman I'd never talked to. That's how I know outreach calls are valuable. Right? Because I will never forget that woman. She said, really? You sound pretty crazy to me. And she was absolutely right. Insane. With gum. I didn't do it then. Are you kidding? Remember? 7 years, 4-year college degree. 10-year engagement, marriage. Right? It takes me time. But it got planted. See, very valuable thing is happening when seeds get planted here. But if the deal is you with a sponsee, it's like, I got to plant you, and then you're going to scream at them, go, go, right? That's not going to work. Isn't that going to be awful on the tape? Like, tell her to stop screaming, right? But it's not going to work. But it's about seed planting, right? It's about love and sunlight and seed planting, right? And rainbows, right. So it's just, you know, it's just about putting stuff out there. But I don't want to miss out anymore. I'm 48 years old. I've missed out on too much of my life. I don't want to miss out on anymore. I don't. So that's why I do the outreach calls. It's, in the end, it's not a perfunctory thing so that I can please a mommy sponsor. It's not about that. It's, I don't want to miss out anymore. I want to go to lots of meetings. I don't want to miss out anymore. I don't. I'm done missing out. Then we get to chapter 4, which is the step 2 part. We agnostics, right? And this is wonderful because this really cracks open, you know, some wonderful stuff and starts the beginning of what will be a lifelong search, which is, what is your conception of God? Right, and so people, you know, people pick up various things from there. I remember I sponsored one woman whose mother she was Catholic, and her mother had 8 sisters, and 7 of them were nuns. So I mean, she just had all kinds of you know, background in theology and stuff, and just had a lot of pain and anxiety around her relationship with God. And here's just what I can tell you as I'm on this continuing journey of my own, right, as we all are, in terms of God. Here are some things that I've gotten very clear about. God is love, right? It's all love. And I can worship any God I want as long as I'm willing to emulate that God. So I can have any God I want as long as I'm willing to emulate that God, to copy that God. So that means if I've gotten to the point, which I have in my own life, that God is all love and God is all forgiveness and there is no hell. Nobody gets punished. Nobody gets left behind. I get to have that God, right? You know how people say, like, write a classified ad, you get to have whatever you want? There's some responsibility that comes with that, right? You really think I get to have a God that's all love and all forgiving? Meanwhile, I get to judge you and be mad at you and decide you've done it wrong? Really? Really? I don't know. Check it out with your sponsor. I'm not sure about that. I know for me it doesn't work that way. I can have any God I want as long as I'm willing to copy that God. So that's why my mantra today is forgive. And I didn't, this came from somebody in my church. Forgive everybody of everything all the time. I know. Isn't that funny? I know. Remember though? Remember back on page whatever? Psychic change, vital spiritual experience. Huge emotional displacement where complete ideas, everything that used to run your life has to be thrown out. And there's some other place, there's some wonderful thing, and I think it's somewhere in the forewords or something. There's some wonder, remember, read the book yourself. But there's some wonderful thing where it says, you are going to have to turn, I'm paraphrasing, you're going to have to turn everything upside down if you want to stay here and do the deal. You have to turn everything up down. Everything upside down. And it's a completely radical thing to think about forgiving of everybody, of everything all the time. It is. It's completely radical. Be radical. Why not? Try it. Try it. You could always retreat back to your moat, whatever it is, right? You can always retreat back. Try it. Try and be radical. Anyway, so that's what's fun in that chapter, and that's a lifelong thing. So, you know, just writing something about ideas about God, okay? Then we get, and actually, step two actually continues. It's not just the We Agnostic chapter. It actually continues through the middle of page 60. And again, this is all, you know, goofy semantics and stuff, but it's fun to do. So, because we read the A, B, and C at the end of how it works, you know, convinced that, you know, we're alcoholics, couldn't manage our own life, that no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, God couldn't would if he were sought. And then it says, the next paragraph, being convinced we were at step three. So that tells me that part of that restoration to sanity, right, because step two is that, believing that my power greater than myself will restore me to sanity, it's making clear then part of that restoration to sanity is my willingness to go through all the steps of the program, the steps that we read and how it works. Okay, and we will come back to you're really good, remember. Just remind me to get back to the original how it works. We'll talk a little bit about that. I want to make sure we hit that. But so then that just tells me that for that restoration to sanity, I'm going to have to do all those steps. Right? That's the good news. Okay, now step three. This is my favorite part of the big book. Step three part is from the middle of page 60 to the bottom of page 63. That's a wonderful thing. I would invite everybody to read that. If you haven't read that lately, read it when you get home. It's a game changer, and this just really got planted for me as the wonderful thing is when these things just get planted as you're reading these things for years and years and years here. But at the top of page 63, this is my favorite paragraph in the big book. When we sincerely took such a position, the antecedent is in the paragraph before, it's basically that God's in charge, I'm not, right? God's the director, we're the actor, right? That's the antecedent. So when we sincerely took such a position, I'm not in charge, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. That's pretty powerful. That's page 63, paragraph at the top. That's pretty powerful. All I have to do is not eat Snickers bars whenever I want and not be in charge in my life. And I'm going to be free of fear today, tomorrow. So today, the present, the future, and life after life, or life after death, whatever you call it. That's pretty powerful, right? Then we get into step four, right? So then it talks about the fourth step. And when I do people with the fourth step, in the big book, we do the columns, right? So we just are identifying, I resent, and I brought, if somebody wants to come up, you can come see it afterwards. I brought, somebody had put it out on a sheet, and it's, I resent the cause, and it affects my, and then column four. And there's always the big fun thing, because the truth is, there, as you can see in here, there is no fourth column in a big book inventory. Everybody says, oh, I do the four column inventory in the big book. It's not, it's three. But they talk about it, right? So they go on and talk about it. So we've kind of adopted it and created it, right? That, and, you know, my part. It's all about figuring out what is my part. And I guess when they have the little, you know, affects my, and they have the little things in parentheses, those are kind of your part. But the fourth column is where everything gets really golden, right? And how it's broken down in here is selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, and frightened, and inconsiderate. So anytime I have a resentment, so let's go to the big guns, right? So I resent, let's just call him Joe. I resent Joe. Molested me when I was a kid. Affects my self-esteem, felt me materially, emotionally, acceptable, sex relations, blah, 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 blah. Affects all those things I have in a column here. Then we get to the fourth column. What is the exact nature of my wrongs? So again, what do we call him? Joe? Joe molested me. Well, wait a minute. What did I do? I didn't do anything. I have a part. And again, this is the radical stuff that it's talking about. Remember? Vital spiritual psychic change and vital spiritual experience. When everything has to be uprooted and totally shifted around. And I have to look for my part. Now, if I've held a resentment against Joe for 45 years for molesting me, I owe Joe an apology. Now, I've never had a sponsee who had the person who molested them still alive. But I would never ask anybody to go to a pedophile and do this. But we're going to write a letter. We'll talk about that when we get to 8th and 9th step. But you got to see your part. It all starts with seeing your part. Is it selfish for me to resent somebody for having done something bad? Well, I think it is. I've done bad things to people. So is it selfish for me to think, well, I get to do bad things to people. Now, I've never molested a kid, but I'm not going to stand on relative principles like that. If I've done something crappy and somebody else has done something crappy, we've both done something crappy, right? So is it selfish? Well, it is in my mind. And I help my sponsees see where it is. It's selfish. It's selfish for me to resent you and be mad at you when you've done something for somebody who's done something bad to you. You've done bad things to people. Right? I've done bad things to people. I'm in no position to judge. Is it dishonest? Well, sure it's dishonest. It's dishonest if I'm judging you and I'm not paying attention to what I've done. Self-seeking and frightened, is it inconsiderate and impolite? It is, right? And it's important. And I got to tell you, this is where I got free. See, I want to be free. When I get free and I start feeling free and feeling my value, I will feel less called to eat poorly. That's how it changes. That's how I get transformed. I want to see my part. That's the good news today. That is the good news. When I am looking at myself and not looking at you. You know, when I'm not late, you're all driving fine. Right? You're all driving fine. There's none of this. Come on, let's go, let's go. It's the one on the right, let's go. There's none of that when I'm not late. Right? None of that. It's not about you. It is not about you. There is no other. Everything's a mirror. Now that's tough to get when you got big stuff like, molestation. But hey, there it is. So that's where we're at on a fourth step, right? And then you get into giving it away in the fifth step. So that's where we get into the step six part of the book is from 72 to the top of page 76, and it's talking about the value of giving it away. And only a few times have I done what it directs us to do at the bottom of 75, which is return home, find a quiet place, and sit for an hour and be quiet. I've done that a few times. It actually is pretty powerful. But you know, as is par for the course. Just because I did it and it worked doesn't mean I'm going to necessarily do it again. So, you know, there. I know. Thank you, Elizabeth. Yeah. Elizabeth got my joke. So just because I've done it, you know, it works really wonderfully, but I haven't always done it since then, but it is a wonderful thing. And then, of course, you have step 6 and step 7. They get their little paragraph each about at the top of page 76. And just when we get to step 6, right, because it's all pretty clear, right? You're all pretty clear when people do an inventory. And I always tell people 15 minutes a day on an inventory. If you're doing the one that's myriad questions, or if you're doing the big book one, if you're doing with me, we're doing the big book one. But we don't spend a long time on an inventory, right? If you're going through hell, you don't want to linger, right? And it can be a pretty painful thing to do an inventory. It doesn't. It's I don't know. It was never as painful to me as the degradation of being out there. But you know, it's painful to look at some of that stuff and look at my part. But so it's 15 minutes a day at least, and then we just get that thing done, and then we set up a time and give it away. And then when we get to 6 and 7, I have people, we do, because it's always talking about balance and inventories and stuff, I always have people write, you know, because, you know, we're really hard on ourselves. That's the thing we really dig. We really get off on being hard on ourselves, which is a character defect, by the way. But then people say, oh, and I'll just write all my character defects. I say, yeah, and I say, but just, you know, you're going to write as many assets as you have defects. But yeah, sure, have at it. So people will call me and they'll have, you know, 87 character defects and 12 character assets. And I say, well, you got to come up with assets, right? Monica was one of my sponsors, and she had a hard time coming up with her assets. And, you know, you got to come up with as many assets as you had defects. Because otherwise, that's just more of the, you know, pridefulness and hubris, you know, what, it's just a whole bunch of things to feel like you're a loser. It's martyrish, it's a victim, it's all that stuff that just is not serving you. You need to know your value in the world, right? And so we'll come up with character defects and character assets, right? So we get clear about that. And then we get to 8 and 9. And it tells us here, right, let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we've harmed and whom we're willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. Right? So it tells me I've made my 8-step list when I took my inventory. That's how I know everybody who ends up on my list ends up on my 8-step list. Right? And remember, it was agreed at the bottom of that paragraph, at the beginning, we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol or food. Any lengths. Right? So they're on that list, and we just make a list. And then what I have people do, because again, most of the people I'm working with are older, usually they're older women, and they've had a lot of, you know, painful stuff and, you know, lots of history. We just do a lot of letter writing. And again, this is stuff, because we don't get a lot of specific direction how to take somebody through a night, you know, to dealing with all the specific instances. You know, there isn't a lot of that information. So then, you know, we get to, as sponsors, be very cognizant of what worked for us and then share that, right? So I do know it says that all the names on a 4-step end up on an 8-step, and I know that an 8-step, its value is making the amends in the 9-step, so that there's a lot of letter writing, and I have people write letters. And there are 3 parts to a letter, right? And it's, I forgive you for molesting me, Joe. Please forgive me for not having molested you. I mean, wait, what? Joe, I forgive you for having molested me. Please forgive me for not having forgiven you for years for having molested me. So it's, I forgive you for molesting me. Please forgive me for not having forgiven you. Because that was what I did wrong. Right? Willing to go to any lengths here. This is radical stuff. I get it that it's radical stuff, but it tells me I have to do something radical if I really, really want to get transformed. Right? And then the third thing I have them do is write some nice memory about Joe. Because the problem is, when Joe did something horrible to you, all of a sudden that's all you do is you think about Joe in that way. That's all that Joe is. That's not all Joe is. It's not. It's not all he is at all. So when I think about the man who molested me, one wonderful thing he did is, I remember he would always save shiny pennies for me from his grocery store. Right? Because I just don't want to be a victim anymore. I don't want to be a victim. And if I want to stay in my forgiveness, or I want to stay in my self-righteousness, because I led an AA meeting one time, and a woman, you know, got on the Q&A, and she got angry. She left the meeting. She was like, I can't believe you asked sponsees to forgive, you know, the person who molested them. You know, clearly she had, you know, painful stuff going on. And she stormed out of the meeting, right? And everybody was, you know, lovely, and she was, you know, kind of a troubled woman anyway. But I just don't want to be a victim anymore. I don't. I don't want to self-righteously declare that I don't owe you an apology. How dare you? Anytime I start a sentence with how dare you, I'm in trouble. Right? How dare you expect an apology from me? How dare you ask me to do that? What? What? So I don't want to be trapped anymore. I don't want to be a victim. And I'll tell you what, I got free. Linda, we'll get to questions afterwards. I want to be free. And I cannot be free when I'm angry and I'm not forgiving you. I can't. I can't. And I got free. It's amazing. I am absolutely free behind that stuff. And so that's pretty powerful. So that's what goes on with the eighth and ninth step. So I have everybody, if it's not someone they're going to make direct amends to, and when they are direct amends to parents and things like that, it's light and lovely, right? Keep it brief, my Al-Anon sponsor always says. Keep it brief. Right? People's attention spans are short. Keep it brief. So it's just, hey, you know, mom, so, and if I haven't been the daughter, you know, oh, I haven't been the daughter I wanted to be, or whatever it is to my mom, it's, you know, hey, mom, you know, maybe taking her to lunch, doing something nice like that, but it's, you know, mom, I just want to tell you, I think I have been a real brat. I was a real bratty daughter. I was really unkind, or I wasn't appreciative, and I wasn't loving to you. And I'm just really sorry. I just want you to know I'm going to spend the rest of my life making it up to you. I love you. But I'm really sorry, and I'm so grateful for everything that you did. And then stop talking. Right? It's really important when you're making ninth-step amends. Stop talking. And give them a chance to respond. Give them a chance to tell you to get the hell out. And they don't want anything to do with you. I've never had anybody do that. But you got to give them a chance. Right? And most of the time, it's a big love fest. And again, remember I told you I did a lot of stealing. So I had a lot of financial amends to make. And I'd worked at that McDonald's, remember the McDonald's? And I'd stolen all that food. I had a sponsor who had me make a donation to Ronald McDonald House. And that was really cool. And I'm so glad about that. I am really, really glad about that. And yes, my sponsor reminded me, because again, I did a lot of stealing and I did shoplifting, and I couldn't remember where I shoplifted from, so I thought, whew, you know, I avoided that mess. And my sponsor said, well, how much do you estimate that you shoplifted in college and stuff? I said, let's say 12, I think it was 1200, 12 or 1500 bucks. And she said, and I said, but I can't remember where I did it, so that's one of those living amends things. She's like, living amends? I'm going on the assumption you want to do living amends. That's what the whole life process is about. Your whole life is a living amends. Living amends are nonsense. So you do more than living amends, precious. If you stole, we're paying somebody back. So she had me make anonymous donations of, you know, $1,500 over time. It took me a while. I was in college. So it took me time. I was in graduate school or whatever. I can't remember where I was. Anyway, it took me a time. Right? Remember, that's a theme with me. It takes me time. But I paid those, you know, I paid money back. I gave money back to the world. And that was a game. And she said, you know, don't feel bad. You know, don't feel, you know, you're not giving them your money. You're not giving somebody your money. You're giving them their money back. Right? So that was really important for me. And I was a babysitter who always ate people's food and stuff. One of my living amends in the world is anytime I've got food on my plate and somebody wants a bite, I'll always give them a bite. Always. Always. That's one of my living amends. So, because I took your food. I ate everything that you had. So, yeah, I will share. I will share. But if you've been friends with me long enough, you're going to know better than to ask me for, you know, some of my food. My husband will be like, wow, that looks really good, but I don't want any. I'm like, that's good, honey. Okay. All right. Then we get to step 10, right? And this is on page 84. And again, that's fun because, you know, alcoholics love to argue about this. And, you know, the step 10 is described differently in the big book. You know, Bill wrote the, you know, the 12 and 12 later in 1950 or 51. And he was struggling with depression, interestingly enough. And And step 10 there is described as something you do at night. In the big book is, the 11th step is described as what you both do at night, your review at night, and what you do on awakening, right? That's the 86-88 thing I referenced. But in the big book, what it talks about, a 10th step is what you do throughout the course of the day. And it's right there, that paragraph, this thought brings us to step 10, and it says, I'm going down into the middle of the paragraph, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And I just say, anytime you're off the beam, and you know when you're off the beam. And there are four steps. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. So my little acronym for a 10th step is, God makes apples sweet. So the first thing I do when I'm off on a tangent, right, and I'm off the beam, right, all of a sudden I'm out and I'm in fear. And fear is kind of the big one for me. Fear or shooting my mouth off, particularly to my husband. I don't really shoot my mouth off in the world, but I can be a real brat with my husband. But so then I'm off the beam, and I remember I had a health fear coming up about 2 years ago when I got introduced to this 10th step. And I've read this book hundreds of times, and somebody pointed it out to me in my 22nd year of sobriety about a 10th step in the book. And I had real fears. I was on my way into my gym, and I had real fears coming up. Something was a bad day. I don't have bad days in general with my health, but I was having a bad day. And I have chronic pain. I'm in chronic pain, but this was a particularly bad day. And so I thought, oh, that's right. Isn't this time for that 10th step nonsense that woman was talking about? So, okay, so what's the deal? God, please remove the fear. I have real health fears going on. I called somebody, right? God makes apples sweet. So it's God, man. So now I call somebody, make an outreach call, make an amends if I've harmed anyone. I hadn't harmed anyone. It was a fear toward me, and I hadn't had time to, hurt myself yet. And then, sweet, right, get into service. So I had the fear come up, made an outreach call, and I just said to somebody, hey, Monica, hi, it's Sheila making an outreach call. Do you have just a quick minute? Yeah, sure, what's up? Because I always tell people on outreach calls, always ask somebody if it's a convenient time for them to talk, right? It'll make it easier. Everybody wins if you make sure everybody's got time. And she said, yeah, sure, what's up? And I said, I'm just doing a 10 step. I'm having some health fears go up. Going on, and I just wanted to do a 10 step. Oh, what's going on? Oh, nothing, Mary. Monica, I don't want to get into it. I just thank you for listening. I just needed to share it with somebody. Just kind of doing that 10 step thing, page 84. And people are like, what? Because nobody does it, because we just don't pay attention to that stuff, because we think we've gotten the prize when we've lost the weight. And we haven't, right? You're supposed to be happy, joyous, and free, like it talks about in the family afterward. That is not bumper sticker stuff. We literally get free here. If you do this stuff regularly in the book that it talks about, you can live happy, joyous, and free. It's amazing. So anyway, so I called Monica. I didn't have any amends to make anybody, and then I needed to do service. And I'm on my way into the gym, so I start picking up trash. So I get to the gym, get rid of the trash, wash my hands, go into my yoga class. Within 5 minutes, that fear was gone. And I mean, it was a huge fear. It was huge pain, and there was huge fear behind the pain. And the pain wasn't gone, but the fear was gone. And I mean, it was gone. And I thought, wow, this stuff works. And this has been radical for me, getting introduced to the idea of a 10th step that I can take throughout the course of a day. Game changer, page 84. Right? And then step 11, which starts, and then there's other cool stuff it talks about, the 10th step throughout the day. But step 11, from the bottom of 85 to the end of the chapter, right, to the 88, and it's talking about the what we do at night, so the review at night, and people have different ideas. I've heard people talk the bowel thing, abstinence, exercise, all those different things. There are a lot of great people who have different things they do for whether you call them a 10th or 11th step. Emerson says any life worth living is worth recording and acknowledging. So, it's just important to kind of pay attention. And I just need to tell you, I don't do it. I don't do it regularly. So more will be revealed as I, start bringing that into my world. But I don't do a regular written 10th or 11th step at night. But there are different, I do it occasionally. I go in and out. And I've experienced it as very powerful. Now, what I do is I do the on awakening. And that's part of my morning prayers. I talked about that. So, on awakening, starting at the bottom of age 86, and again, we don't have time to read through it all, but on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. And it asks, to be free of self-seeking, self-pity, and dishonest motives. And I kind of got it as like a mantra. It's like I'm, doing the rosary or something. And, and it says that intuition and inspiration will become a working part of our mind, and we come to rely on it. And it talks about, don't disdain, religion and show up, suit up and show up if that's something that calls you. As we go through the day, we're to pause when agitated or doubtful. I'm to constantly remind myself I'm no longer running the show. Humbly saying to myself many times each day, thy will not mine be done. It works. We'll be lovingly disciplined in the way we've just outlined. So that's a wonderful thing. I just love that, getting really marinating in that in the morning. And then we're back to chapter 7, working with others. And then I have them read it again, and where you will really get it now in a way that you didn't get it when you're looking at it the first time, as you have gone through and completely been transformed, as you have dug that stuff out and you realize, I don't want to be angry anymore. I don't want to be unforgiving. And I want to be free. And all of a sudden, that wanting to be free has a greater value to you in the world than being angry and not forgiving. Or standing on principle, and he shouldn't have done that. And you know what? Joe shouldn't have molested me. And whoever did anything rotten to you, you're right. They shouldn't have done it to you. But they did. Now what? Now what are we going to do? Right? Right? And there's a lot of loving communication. You know, when I'm in a tender conversation with a sponsee who's really in pain, I have a woman that I'm sponsoring now in New Jersey, and I just cannot believe what she has been through. I cannot believe it with, boyfriend, current boyfriend, and dragging her around by the hair. I mean, I just can't believe it. I can't believe it. I just can't believe it. So there's a lot of loving communication, and I'm right there with you, right? It's a lot of loving. That's not a time for clarity. Crystal clear clarity. That's a time for love and compassion and clarity. But it's there's a lot of love and warmth and cradling and hand-holding as we figure out if you want to be free. That's all. That's all. And I've never had anybody, once they get to this point, that didn't want to keep going. And one of my women that I sponsor, because I do a lot of sponsoring on the phone, and in town too. But there's a woman, and she's lost, I think, 80 pounds since December. And she's like a woman in her 50s. She was an incest survivor. She was angry. Another one in San Francisco. It was weird. I had two women on two different coasts, and they were like twinsies. They were both like the same age, and struggling, and both incest. It was just amazing. It was amazing. And they both that you just think you just can't even believe it. You just can't even believe it. It's amazing. What's powerful, and what's powerful when we really are taken through the book and somebody is lovingly directing us and holding us accountable and responsible to do what it asks us to do. And it says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Right. Carry this message to other alcoholics. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, see a fellowship grow about you. You don't want to miss this. Frequent contact with the newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. It doesn't say is a bright spot of our lives. It says it's the bright spot of our lives. Right? That's pretty powerful. And that sponsor, right, that game-changing OA sponsor for me, I wish I could say her name, but I just don't know that it would be appropriate. Let's just call her Joan. So, this woman who changed my life, when she got to the point that she decided it was time for me to sponsor it, I said, oh yeah, okay, sure, I'll get a sponsee. Yeah, right. And she gave me, she said, well, and a couple weeks went by, and she said, did you get a sponsee yet? And I said, no, I haven't. And she said, well, Sheila, honey, I'm going to give you 2 more weeks, and if you don't get a sponsee, I'm going to get one for you. And she said, and I'm just going to tell you, I'm going to get you a doozy. Right? So, you might want to get one of your own. So I quickly found 2 sponsees. Because I was taught this in Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't sponsor one person, sponsor 2. Because then it can grow exponentially. If you sponsor one person and they sponsor one person, because they're not going to sponsor more than you do, right? And then it's just a stalk growing up. And, I like corn in a field as much as anybody, but I like rose bushes better. Whereas if I sponsor 2 people, and then they're going to sponsor 2 people, and then they sponsor 2, you know what I mean? It grows exponentially. And what I usually do is I have 4 sponsees. And I'm talking to them, on around the clock. There's an hour spot in the morning. That's usually how it goes for me. And that's where we end up in working with others, is just that, getting real clear with that direction. And that's it in terms of the steps from the big book. So do we have time for questions? We do have time for... Thank you. Thank you very much. You are so awesome. You're amazing. All right, so we are, and, you know, Bill wrote all the pages of the first 164 pages, except what we read and how it works. And, yeah, so from 58 to the middle of 63, that's when the first 100, the 99 men and the one woman, weighed in. Because Bill initially had a very harsh how it worked. And I'll just give you some of the words, and you can cross these out and write these above in your book. But they had come to him and they said, Bill, you know, I don't know that you can kind of talk to alcoholics, and, you know, you better tame it down. And so if you were to read, I'd never done it, but I heard somebody who did, that if you were to read the first 164 pages in a day, you can really see that there's a real difference in those three pages. They just feel much different. There's just a lot of softness and a lot of gentleness, even to the couching of, you know, using we and things like that. You know, Bill wanted to say you are powerless over alcohol in your life. You know, he wanted to really just kind of come down hard, and they really tampered it for him. So let's see. Bill, rarely have we seen a person fail. Bill originally had never. And rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. It wasn't path, it was directions. So Bill had never seen a person fail who has followed our directions. Right? There's a much different language with directions versus path. Right? At some of these we balked. Then you are ready at the second paragraph. Then you are ready to take certain steps. He had followed directions. Then you are ready to follow directions. Right? At some of these we balked. And what he originally has is, you may balk. You may think you can find an easier, softer way. We doubt if you can. Right? Remember, you are dealing with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. It wasn't we. It's not the royal we. Oh, we're powerless. Bill's like, no, you're powerless. That's really important that I get it. It's good that we are a we in a community, but it's all about, you know, power. Getting clear about what my problem is. And step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care and direction, is how God, Bill had it, of God as we understood him. If you send me an email, here's my email address, sjenka, and I think it's actually, you've got all this stuff in the OA 12 and 12. So there's an email address for me. That's the better email address. Or the 12-stepper, I mean, yeah. It's in the 12-stepper, and my phone number's in there, but don't call me with this, please. Send me an email and put in the subject line, original 12, and original how it works. I think I have this on a thing where I can email it to you, but it's just... Oh, cool. You? Oh, sure. Okay, it's online too. My email. See me on the break. If you don't have my thing, see me after the thing, and I'll give it to you. I don't know what the email address is. Just take my regular email address: sjenca@ucla.edu, sjenca@ucla.edu, and send me an email and just put it in the subject line. And, you know, don't call me pissed off if you don't hear from me right away, because I'm probably going to get umpteen requests. I'll get it out, and I want to make sure you don't end up in the junk folder. And here's my phone number. You can call me anytime for outreach. It's 310-413-1745. 310-413-1745. You can call me anytime on that cell phone. That's a Verizon cell, and it's off when it needs to be off, so you won't disturb me. Howard, put something, you know, from the workshop. Just put something so... You know, I flag it. Anyway, and step seven, he had humbly on our knees asked him to remove our shortcomings, holding nothing back, right? Became willing to make complete amends to them all, is what he had on step eight. And the step 12 was, having had a spiritual experience as the result of this course of action, we tried to carry this message to others, and especially alcoholics, to practice these principles in all our affairs. You may exclaim, what an order, blah, blah, blah. Then he has in the ABC, you are alcoholic and cannot manage your own life. That probably no human power could have relieved your alcoholism. See that God can and will, if sought. And then he had this, at the end of... Being convinced we were at step three. Okay, oh no, after the C, after the A, B, and C, this was what was in the book. If you are not convinced on these vital issues, you ought to reread this book to this point or else throw it away. Wow. I know, isn't that cool? He was like, look, either do this or get lost. And they came to him, I think wisely, they came to him and said, oh, no, 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 you need to be a little softer. And he reluctantly agreed, but later he talked about it in letters and things that he knew he made the right decision, it was a good thing. But he was very, you know, he was very reluctant in the beginning. But it just brings home the point. There's stuff to do here. If you want to change, you got to do stuff. That's all. Okay, so let's do some questions. Yes?
You said you need to give everybody to read a
chapter
a day?
No, 2 pages a day. 2 pages a day in the big book. You'll get through in about 9-10 months.
Yes, but...
Oh, yeah, when they're on the steps, right. When we're on the steps, right. So when we're on step one, step one is 4 chapters. It's doctor's opinion
right.
Through chapter 3. So, yeah, they'll read a chapter a day. Yeah. Yeah, anything that comes up for you in that, anything, right? Just think, keeping in mind that we're on step one. So anything that it brings up for you about powerlessness and unmanageability. Yep. So that's when they're on step one. Yes?
So do you have your people read it back to you?
Writing? Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely. They'll read that in the morning. That's what we do on the outreach call. And I remember I was so mad that this sponsor, right, this Joan, was directing me and telling me what to do and that I was going to talk to her every day. I was just furious. And I just thought, I know what I'm going to do, Joan. I'm not going to get on the phone and say anything. So she said, how are you doing? I said, I'm fine. She said, did you do the right? Yeah, I did. And I just wouldn't talk because I was so mad. That's what a brat I was, right? I was so mad. She said, do you have anything you want to talk about? And I said, no, I actually don't. And she said, all right, well, let's open our big book and we'll read to each other. So we did that for about 2 days, and I just thought, okay, surrender. And then I just, you know, started, bleh, right? And it all came up in my writing and all that stuff. But it was just wonderful. But she just was, her thing was, you know, I'm not going to fool around here. We're not going to fool around. And she had people waiting in the wings. I mean, if you were done with her, the spot went away. Because people really, you have to give, you especially have to give chronic slippers. You got to give them your time. You got to give them your time. You know, I know people who say like, oh, my sponsee will like take my food in the morning and, you know, and then that's it. And I think, that wouldn't help me. That wouldn't work for me. You got to give them your time. You got to give them your time. Yep, Linda.
When you, before you were talking about, three things that you do, you'll know what I'm talking about. The first was I forgive you for, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And the second was please forgive me for having...
For not having forgiven you.
What's the third?
You bring up a nice memory. So something about it. Because again, if somebody's done something bad to us, that's the only way we see that person. And haven't you ever had that experience, been in a meeting where you're in a circle and you're looking across and you think, man, I can't stand, you know, Tom, right, who's in the circle with me. But you think, isn't that cool? Because I'm holding her hand. Who's holding her hand? Who's holding his hand? Who's holding her hand? Who's holding... And all of a sudden we're in a circle and we all just, you know... We're loving each other. That's because that's not, or else, worse yet, right? You got a bone to pick with Tom, and you're angry at Tom, and somebody will come up and say, isn't Tom the greatest guy? I mean, he just, you know, he just like, you know, washed my car. Isn't he wonderful? And you just think, really? Is he? Well, he is. That's not the truth of who Tom is. So we want to get that stuff out. I just want to root that stuff out. I want to root it out. I want to be free, and I want to stop being a victim. And stop blaming you, because I hurt. Yep. I'm sorry. What? Oh, I think yeah. We're recording it. I think it'll go up on the LA intergroup or something. I don't know how this works. I just was told to record it, so it'll end up somewhere. I think. If I push the right buttons and everything. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Paul. Welcome over
here. Hi.
Working on step 5.
Cool.
I wanted to ask you, how soon after working with steps with the sponsor can you ask them to direct them to sponsor?
Oh, after a 4-step. Once they've read their 5th step to me, it's time to start sponsoring people. And again, because it we just don't want to lose it. It's just too vulnerable of a point. You just don't want to lose it, and you have something to give. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
What about if they're still being compulsive?
That's fine. Yeah, be honest with a sponsee about that. Yeah, just be honest. Again, there's nothing to be ashamed of. So you just want to kind of take away the shame. So if I were taking on a sponsee and I was somebody who was still in the food, is it would be, you know, first of all, that doesn't even come up in a discussion. I've never had a sponsee ask me about my food. I'll tell my sponsees I'm completely transparent. You want to know what I ate last night? I'll send you the same thing I sent my sponsor. I don't care. I know. You have at it. Have fun. So, but sponsees don't ask you what you're eating. People don't do that stuff. They just don't. Don't worry about that. Yep. Anybody else? Any questions? Oh, we did good. Yes.
Somebody, I asked my sponsor what she's eating.
Cool.
Other people, if I wanted to, like, what can I do? Doctors.
Sure.
But also, my sponsor wants to do is let me apply to as well.
Terrific. Terrific.
No, I don't know what this.
Well, she's doing it wrong, but no, I'm just kidding. See, that's a joke. That's comedy. That's comedy. That's comedy. No, she's not doing it right. That's what she believes. You know, people have different ideas.
Yeah,
exactly. It's from her. Well done. It's from her story.
What's the reason why you do it after 4?
Because I don't want you to lose. It's too. You've got something to give away. Let's get you moving. Let's get you moving and sharing what you've got. And you know, it's all about. It's a program of attraction. So people are. You know, I remember I had such a dry spell for a long time where I never had a sponsee. And it was like, you know, don't you want what I have? Like, no, apparently not. So, you know, it's okay. I mean, it's just about being available. It's really, all it means is your heart open. Are you willing to help somebody? It's just, I want my heart open. For I've lived too long with my heart really closed. I was really hard-hearted. I don't want to be that way anymore. I don't. You know, and I lapse, and that's what's the wonderful thing about, you know, amends and all that, you know, 10 steps, and I get to take responsibility, but I don't want my heart closed down anymore. I don't. Not at all. You know? I remember I had a boss that was giving me, I was in a social work position, and I had to get reviewed by my boss, and she said, you know, I got a very harsh review, and I was furious, right? I was like a year and a half sober. I went to an AA meeting, and I said, you know, Sheila, I'm an alcoholic, and I just got a horrible review from my bitch boss, and she said this, and she said that, and she said I don't do this, and I'm, you know, don't always come on time. And then the last thing this bitch said, she actually said I can't take criticism. And everybody just burst into laughter in this AA meeting. I mean, burst into laughter. And like, I got it. Wham. I got it. In the loving cradle of a group, right, which tells me why it's important for me to tell the truth and come to meetings and show up and just put it out there. And I got it. That's right, darling. You don't know how to take criticism. We love you. But you're a little pumpkin, and you don't know how to do that. You don't know how to do that, right? So that's what I love. That's what happens here. That's what I want to do as a sponsor, right? It's just kind of be not shaming, but be clear, right? It's just like, no, you actually, you know, that's not going to work, but you'll figure it out, right? You've lost. You just don't know it yet. That's all, right? Anybody up, please.
I just want to thank you. This has been absolutely wonderful.
Aww. I'm glad it was helpful. Good. I'm glad it was helpful.
And it really, telling the truth and those three steps, when you were just repeating the three steps, the first time you said, you know, I forgive you for this, and please forgive me, and I forgive you. I mean, I just couldn't start sobbing. And then when you repeated it again, you used the name Tom. And that's exactly the first thing that I wrote down, Thomas.
Wow. 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 I'm glad it was helpful. I love that I don't have to be angry anymore. And it'll happen now, you know, I'm driving and somebody does, you know, some goofy thing driving and immediately I'll think, oh, come on, stop pleading. And then I'll just think, oh, no, I'm sorry. You know what? You're doing just fine. I'm the one that's late. Bless you. Bless you. Bless me. Keep going. That's what I came here for. I did not come to be a size 6. Who cares? Who cares? That's what I came here for. That is absolutely what I came here for. You know? But I didn't know that. In the beginning, I didn't know that, and I want more people to know that. Monica, what's going on?
Monica, I just thank you so much. That was amazing, and I just want to say I didn't want to share that, but then when I figured out I don't want to share because I have a fear not to share, not to say that. But I want to thank you personally because you are still my sponsor, and it changed my life. The sister who I wanted to kill and her disappear and not see her again, I love right now, and the transformation in my life is very profound. Besides that food is, like you said, the smallest, but I just want to say that aloud so everybody else can hear, because the big book is powerful, when we work the way you did with myself?
Thank you, but it's when we follow the direction here. Now we need, you know, we need wonderful people. We need, that's what doing the workshop is all about. And again, you get to decide for yourself. There's no wrong way. It doesn't mean you have to do it this way. I just wanted to put it out here. But that's what's possible here, and it literally does. It says this will become the bright spot of our lives. It really does. It's really powerful. And it's lovely when people say, you know, thank you, you changed my life. It's like, I didn't change your life. God changed your life. I was a channel, and you were willing to do the work. And then you had somebody who was willing to be in charge of your boat. That's life changer, right? Those three things. God, your willingness, because when you think about it, that's the only thing, that's the most wonderful gift in the world I can give God, is my open hands and my open heart. I can give that gift to God. How many gifts do I get to give to God? You know, God doesn't want, you know, I play guitar, so maybe God likes to hear me sing and play my guitar and stuff, but I think there's nothing that makes God happier than my willingness to give a gift to God. So at the beginning of the day, and I'm going to come back to you, David, at the beginning of the day, if I want to eat, you know, fried chicken and bonbons, and instead I have a chicken salad, because I'm giving that desire, that ardent desire some days, I'm giving that to God. And it's usually not so much about food, but maybe it's to shoot my mouth off to my husband and just, you know, educate him, right? I mean, not physically, I don't mean hit him. I mean, you know, just like, let's you know, educate him. When I give that desire to God, that's a holy thing. That's a holy thing, you know? That's a holy thing. Yes, David.
David, I'm calling. If your sponsee starts sponsoring after step 5, what happens when the grand sponsee overtakes sponsees?
What? Overtakes? Are we? Is this turned into a Greco-Roman wrestling thing? What's happening? What do you mean? What?
For instance, say someone has trouble getting, your sponsee has trouble getting past step 9.
Right.
What happens when the his sponsee gets to step 9?
Wow. Never had that experience. That's a great thought. Never had that experience. But I must tell you this, David. We get through that step 9 pretty quickly. We get through that pretty quickly. Because those letters don't have to be long. It literally is just like that. Dear Joe, I forgive you for having molested me. Please forgive me for not having forgiven you. And I remember when you used to bring me sunflowers. Blessings and love on your journey, or whatever, right? And then if you want to shred it or whatever, burn it. I'm not a burner, but anyway. So thank you. So that's our time. We'll do one more question if somebody has one more question in the back. Then we're going to close.
That lives on the second set of steps, number 1 and 2. I've had the experience of having a certain resentment toward my mother.
Oh, I'm so good at mothers. You must call me. I wish we had time for my mother story.
Did you say grandmother or
mother?
Mother.
It's mothers. Oh, you call me on the mother thing. Can I tell you a quick mother story? Can I just tell you a quick mother story? So I was diagnosed with MS, and my mother's sister had MS and died of MS, and it was a huge deal in our family, right? Because she had a 5-year-old son, and her husband had left her when she got diagnosed with MS. It was, right, you know, it was just a travesty in our family. And when she died, my grandmother ended up raising this 5-year-old child, right? So it was a huge deal in our family, MS. And my aunt had a horrible time with the MS. And so when I got diagnosed, you know, and my aunt died of it and stuff, or died of complications due to MS. And when I got diagnosed years later, my mother never, ever, my mom found out because my boss, I was working for a psychiatrist at the time, and his wife ended up telling my mom when my mom had called my work. And my mother never called me. In 10 years, my mother never spoke about MS to me on the phone. She would never get, I would never answer the phone, and she would never say, how are you doing? How's your health? My dad would say, you know, how are you feeling? But she never reached out to me. Nobody in my family did. I came from a crazy alcoholic family, right? Once in a while, I think my sister might call and say something. But my mother never did. And my mother had lost her sister. So I had a juicy, this was like 15 years ago, right? I had a juicy resentment about this. And I had a spiritual counselor that I was working with. And somebody had said to me, you know, if, and I was having real health problems, and they said, if you want to get better with your health, you're going to have to forgive your mother. And I was furious about that. I was like, do not tell me that I have to forgive this bitch. Let me tell you why I don't have to forgive her. And I laid that story out. I mean, I'd actually been to the MS Society and told that story. And I had very compassionate social workers who was like, your mother is a bitch! Right? They're like, wow, I've never heard a story like that. I mean, it really was. It was wild. My mother never brought it up to me. Never. Right? And I said to this woman, that's what my mother did. And you're telling me I need to forgive that woman? Absolutely not. And this woman sat back and she said, wow, your mother never ever acknowledged to you. Boy, are you lucky. And I said, do you want to explain that one to me? She said, if you had finally, because I never got any love from my mom. My mom was a wounded bird, remember, beaten up by her dad routinely. She said, if you had gotten the love from your mother behind being sick, do you realize how motivated you would have been to get really, really sick? And I just felt like somebody, and there's, thank you, I'm always waiting for somebody to get it. It felt like somebody hit me with a hammer, and I absolutely got it. I had never gotten love from my mother for a lifetime. So if I had, my mother had finally called and said, oh my God, I heard this. There's all kinds of bad shit that can happen with MS, right? Wow, what'll happen if I go blind? Wow, what if I'm in a wheelchair? Ooh, what will that get? There was nothing. So there was no juice. There was no motivation. Now, is it live or is it Memorex? I don't have any real appreciable problems. I'm in chronic pain. But, you know, the people are being ritually maligned in countries around the world, women and children and men and stuff. There are worse crises in the world than being in chronic pain. And I got it. So you call me about mothers. I'm a writer. I'm writing a book on mothers. I can help you get free. If you want to get free and you want to do the work. But I'll tell you what. If you are a woman and you are still angry at your mother, you are not free. It's particularly with women. It's a big one with women. It's not about your mother. It's about you. It has nothing to do with your mother. It has everything to do with you. And I got it. I absolutely got it. And remember I told you when I got off sugar? You know what happened January 12th? My mother called me out of the blue. And we had the conversation. I used to call my mother twice a year. I'd call her on her birthday and I'd call her on Mother's Day. And I'd pray for a voicemail. You know, I'd pray for a recording machine every time. Please, God, let me just leave a message. Talk to her again in 6 months. Right? My mother calls me out of the blue on January 12, 2004, a Monday. We have a 3-hour conversation. I used to keep the cell phone bill because she died 6 months later. I used to keep the bill just so I could look at it. We had the conversation I thought we'd have to go to heaven to have. And I said, why did you never talk to me about MS? You lost your sister. Why did you? And she just started crying. She said, I thought you were going to blame me. Because my brother had died of diabetes and he blamed my mother and her genes, right? Diabetes came from her side of the family. So he said. She said, I thought you were going to blame me. But she didn't know. I had, 15 years of program at that time. I don't blame anybody for anything. There's one who has all power. That one is God. May you find God now. It ain't my parents and it's not my genes. God's in charge and all is well. But she didn't know that I knew that. Right? So it was amazing. And that call came from out of the blue. I went down and I was a personal assistant to a woman, an older woman who knew I'd had trouble with my mother. And I went down, I remember I flopped in the chair in her office and I said, hell has frozen over. She said, what do you mean? I said, my mother called and took responsibility for everything in my life. And 3 days later, I got off sugar and I've never had it since. Because the next night was the night at the restaurant with the ovarian cyst. Right? I'm telling you, this is really powerful. When you decide you're really going to dig deep and you don't want to be a victim anymore and you don't want to hold anybody and not forgive anybody, hang on. You're going on the ride of your life. And be in a size whatever is going to be the least of it, if that's what you want. And you know, I don't have any, every, you know, everybody's not supposed to look like this, right? I celebrate all women are princesses and all men are princes, right? We get to look and weigh different things. It's a personal thing. It's all a wonderful thing. Just be healthy, ideally. But that's your business too. But anyway, we can get you free with mothers if you want to be free, because I have a lot of experience with this and I'd love to talk to you.
Fathers too?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Grandmothers?
Yes, all of it. And there's nothing magic. There's nothing magic about this. And it's not about, oh, I got to talk to her. You could call her or her or her. But I mean, call me if you want and we'll talk about it. But I'm telling you, it's not about them. It's about you. Everything is a mirror. Everything is a mirror. Anger, I cannot encounter angry people in my life. If it's showing up in my life, it's already present in my life. It just is. It just is. It just is. That's it for me. Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming.